Welcome back to another episode of Straight to the Point. I am very, very excited today to be joined by a person that I've been trying to get on since I actually went into business with him back in December of 2019. But this guy has definitely completely changed my outlook on business. I'm going to completely blow smoke here at the beginning and see if I can get him to laugh right at the start. But I met this person actually randomly at a networking event and saw him sitting there in a corner on his own with a farmer's jacket on, with a little top hat on, and everyone else was networking in the room and he was just sitting there kind of on his own, just watching. And when I see this sort of individual watching, now normally I hate seeing people on their own, so I decided to go over, say hello, and do you know what? The rest has kind of just turned out the history, because he really, really helped me through a difficult period. A period that, if you've listened to a number of the different episodes on this show, I have referred to it. But he is definitely, I'm going to call him an expert in business. He's done some amazing things. And in this episode, I kind of want to talk a little bit about that, but also around a topic which has completely changed my outlook on what I do within business day to day. And I know if you're listening now, it's definitely going to help you as well. So without further ado, Nicholas Jones, welcome to the Straight to the Point podcast.
Hey, Chris, nice to be here.
And say, for everybody else that doesn't know you, Nick, obviously we've worked together for a little while now, but would you mind giving yourself a little bit of an introduction, who you are, what you do, and kind of whereabouts you and what you specialise in?
Yeah, sure, Chris, no problem. So I'm Nick Jones, and I have a passion for business, and I have a passion for doing business the right way. Now, that's a bit ambiguous, because the isn't generally a right or wrong when it comes to building companies, but I think everybody can forge their own right and wrong and decide on their own moral compass when it comes to building business. So I've built lots of companies, I've failed in lots of companies, and fortunately succeeded in a few. And today, as you've already said, I'm working with you, but I'm working with a number of other experts, entrepreneurs, people who have really great ideas. And we formed the Pipeline 44 group, part of which is your business, Gramication. And we're looking to disrupt, for want of a better word, the sales, marketing, leadership ecosystem, be that in very small businesses, one-man bands, startups, solopreneurs, or very large multinational companies. So I'm enjoying the journey building that company with you guys at the moment.
I love that. And I think it's definitely an exciting venture, something that we've spoken at long about in lots of different detail. And I definitely do believe, as much as I kind of, we have a funny thing about the word disrupt, don't we, when we've spoken about it before, but I definitely think it is it's a way of doing things which is slightly different to what everyone else is talking about these days. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's a word that's overused a lot today. In our context, I think maybe doing it differently is a good way of putting it, Chris. And perhaps leading into what we're going to talk about today, disruption or challenging through simplicity. It's my experience that actually achieving anything in business, in life generally, is about focusing on the basics, keeping it real, keeping it simple, and doing the simple things just reasonably well. There's a lot of pressure on us to be fantastic. There's a lot of pressure on us to be brilliant in everything that we do. And you know better than I do, if you look around the influencer space and the expert space and read LinkedIn or and any platform and sort of read the big business speakers these days, it's all about huge statements. It's all about being brilliant. It's all about the latest craze. And to me, it's just noise. It's just a huge amount of noise, and it gets in the way of so much. And I really feel sorry for people actually who are starting up businesses now, because knowing where to focus and knowing how to cut through that unending noise must be really, really difficult.
I think it all comes down to, I was having a conversation with one of our academy members last week, and one of the things that we were talking about was actually the opposite. So how overcomplicated everything is today, and how actually you have hundreds of different people who all appear to be number one in their industry, number one in their space. And they all talk about one specific way of doing things. And their way is the only way. They speak in such finite ways. And we were having a couple of drinks, having a conversation around it. And actually, your post today, when I looked at it, it was something that I know we've spoken about before. But there's obviously 1,000 different ways to succeed, however you define success in business, right? But I mean, how do we figure out where to start when we have got so many different people giving conflicting pieces of advice, which they give out for free, so we should all really pay attention and listen to it? My question, I guess, is how do we look to fight through that noise and find out who we should really listen to?
Well, I think the simple answer is probably, in my eyes, remove the noise altogether to start with. And look, there's a place for reading, there's a place for educating, there's a place for improving. But nobody knows our own situation like we do. There are thousands and thousands of variables that affect business. And every decision that we make, right from the word go, is based on, you know, has to be based on all of those variables. And I think if we're trying to listen to anybody else and implement any of these big one-line methodologies that purport to, I don't know, enable you to sell more, sell better, build quicker, whatever it is, we're missing the point. And the point is that as a solopreneur, as somebody who's starting a business, we're the people who know what those variables are. We know our product, we know ourselves, we know our services, we know our target audience. Maybe we don't know our target audience, but listening to somebody else telling us who it should be, in my opinion, isn't the way to do that. So I would remove the noise altogether, and I would think. And I know that's something that we've spoken a lot about, Chris, isn't it? Certainly in recent weeks, and that is how we think about our time spend, and actually try to make thinking and reflecting the default state, and not something that we have to schedule in time to do. Our brains are amazingly powerful, and though I'm not a psychologist, using our brains and allowing our brains the freedom to think, to explore, to consider the challenges that we have in lots of different ways, is one of the most powerful tools that we have in business.
Yeah, I think when I was looking back at my journey so far, I think it was fair to say that I probably lost the ability to think in reality. And as we look back over that time, I don't know whether it's a generation thing. I don't know whether it is something which has just been ingrained into especially my age group. But whenever I come across a problem, whenever I actually come across something that's difficult or challenging, I don't tend to sit there and think for myself around what the solution might be. I go straight to Google, go straight to YouTube, and let the top viewed video or the top ranking on Google tell me what the answer is. And that actually was something I only woke up to probably at the beginning of this year, when in reality, what determines what is the right answer and what the wrong answer is? Views definitely don't. However, for some reason, when I was looking back over that period, that was what I was looking at. I wasn't looking at anything else. And as I go throughout my journey now, like you say, I mean, I'm still learning on this. I still don't think to a default. I've spoken about this on this podcast before. I still have to be self-aware and check myself to go, you know what, actually, I've come across a problem here. Let's not go straight to somebody else and ask for the answer. Let's take that time, right? No matter what position I'm in, no matter where I am, take the time, think about it. If I was going to flip and invert, I know Charlie Munger speaks about this, ironically bringing up someone else. He talks about inverting the answers to problems. So you start with what the actual solution is and think backwards as he goes. I've absolutely butchered that in the way that he explains it. I'll put a link to the actual noise that we're talking about here specifically, because...
Do, Chris. A great example of the point, I've no idea who that is. So
you don't know who Charlie Munger is? It's Warren Buffett's, one of Warren Buffett's partners.
Interesting. I'll be one of the people that follow the link. It's all kind of interesting, Chris. You know, working with you and following you on your journey, we've had so many conversations about how we think about problems and how we think about the challenges that are presented to us, how we think about adding value. And it's really rare that we actually step back and think, well, how do we simplify this challenge, simplify this problem, simplify this idea into its most basic form? And there's lots of cliches that we could quote, but, you know, in my experience, if we do the basic stuff just reasonably well, we make the majority of the difference. And I know we were having a conversation about content writing, weren't we, not so long ago, and about how we add value to customers with your business. And it's only natural that we all try to explore adding more ways to serve customers and add complication and layers of complexity. We're all human. We all do it. But I think being able to take the time to step back, and, you know, a good mentor can really help with this process. And I hope that those people listening, if they have mentors, that the mentor's sole purpose really is to help to simplify everything that they're thinking about and doing. But if we just step back and we think and we simplify, quite often we find that the solutions to the challenges, to the problems, the solutions to adding value are often the most obvious, easiest things that we come up with.
I think you used a really, really good example when I was thinking back to it of, the content agency Grammication with what we do. And to give some context to people listening, one of the things that I was looking at was the overall order value that we look to charge for each of our products and services. And I go through this quite frequently, actually, being completely upfront with how this works. I'm always looking at ways to be able to improve what we do for customers, always looking to be able to take a look at our service and go, do you know what, how can they be better? And we were looking at additional things to add, like additional bells and whistles to add. And actually, when we were looking at it and comparing it, Nick actually challenged me with a really, really cool question, which I want to go into in a bit more detail on, was, would the bells and whistles that you're looking to add actually provide the additional value to the client for the additional time they're going to have to spend also going back and forth on it? Or were you just adding things for the sake of adding things and trying to overcomplicate a product that doesn't need to be overcomplicated? And it took me about 5 seconds to realize that 3 hours of thinking about trying to increase order value was a complete and utter waste of time. Because actually, the time that it takes to try and improve something, which actually, you know what, probably doesn't need to be improved at this current point of where it is. It provides the solution to the problem. However, I think especially now, businesses are always looking for ways to over-deliver. I don't know if you agree with this, Nick. Always looking to try and go above and beyond. These all statements that I hear. I mean, what are your thoughts around those sorts of statements, around over-delivering, trying to go above and beyond? Kind of, because I know you have different opinions on different things, but on those specific, statements, what do you think to them?
I agree with everything you've said, and I think we do overcomplicate an awful lot of what we do. The only pushback that I'd give you, Chris, you'd be disappointed if I didn't, is that I don't think that exercise was a waste of time. I think it was a good use of time, but coming to the conclusion that actually you don't need to add anything, I also think was probably the right conclusion at that point. we do try to overcomplicate things, and if we look at the world of startups, I think there's this idea that in order to appear valuable in the eyes of a potential customer, we have to add lots of bells and whistles. We have to add to our services and create these convoluted packages to justify the prices that we're charging. And that, there's lots of reasons for that. And I think partly it's about how people in business try to sell what they're doing. It's about targeting. It's something that we explore a lot and spend a lot of time thinking about in the Pipeline 44 group. We're all about simplifying the process of filling pipeline that is generating leads with inbound and outbound and moving them through a nurture cadence, so nurturing those people in that target audience and then into a sales process. And it's quite easy, I think, when you have a very straightforward, very simple, but very well-defined process when it comes to lead generation and sales to acquire customers, because you're targeting the right people with the right service and you're solving the pains and the problems that they have. I think perhaps one of the catalysts for overcomplication of services is lack of focus on the right target market. And so there's a mismatch between the service that we're offering and the target market that we're trying to sell it to. And that naturally then leads people to try to add more to justify the prices that they're spending. They're charging. But I think it tracks through all business, actually, and it has impact on everything that we do. I think the conversation that we had was about, okay, clearly, I think you decided that the ideas that for the add-ons were not going to add that majority value to the customer. And when you offset that against the cost of delivery and the time on our side and internally in our business, and also the time the customer would have to spend with those bells and whistles, it didn't make sense in the scheme of solving that customer's pain. And we talked about money, we talked about price and profitability and the impact on profitability that it has to over-deliver to give the perception of more value. And we also talked about the fact that quite often I think people focus far too much on the upfront value or the upfront price that they're charging rather than on retention. And retention is something that's talked about a lot, but in our business and in so many other businesses that I've seen and worked with, I think that the goal has to be to onboard customers and to keep those customers. And not necessarily to charge them lots and lots of money for lots of bells and whistles, but to solve their core pain, charge a reasonable amount of money, and then to keep them for as long as possible by continuing to solve that pain. And as long as we do that, and as long as we do that well, we'll continue to acquire new customers, and we'll start to build a business with sustainable revenue, and more importantly, sustainable profitability, without over-delivering, without the complexities that come with adding more and more to our services, usually customer service problems, customer satisfaction problems, because we're trying to do so many things rather than just focusing on the one or the two things that we do really well to solve that customer's pain.
Makes complete sense to me. And it's something that I'm definitely learning more and more about almost pretty much every single day as we look at our growth at this point. And I sometimes think, especially being somebody that's gone through lots of education and actually has academies himself with what we do at Grammarcation as well, I think the statement, more doesn't always mean better, is starting to really, really hit home with me. I used to think that the more that I did meant the better service product I created. And the Authority Academy is actually a prime example of that, where I wanted to make this thing as detailed as possible. I wanted it to have as much information in as possible. But actually what I realized after I created it, and it actually triggered me to redo the whole thing, was that the more concise, the more simple I made it, the more to the point of what people actually need to do to get to the result, the better the results people were getting from the product itself. And it completely conflicted me at the time, because it's like, you know what? I wanted to create this absolute beast of a product that absolutely had everything in that people needed. But I'm finding more and more now that picking one specific pain, one problem, and putting in the simplest form of getting to the solution to that problem is worth more than having lots and lots of information all put together. And I think that can be applied to multiple businesses. And I don't know, Nick, if you've got certain examples of this, of any changes that you've made throughout your business journey with what you've done, but that's definitely been one of mine, of looking at the programs that we're creating and then making sure that we're getting to the answer as quickly as possible.
Yeah, well, I think the best example is the way that we think about our customers for the Pipeline 44 group and what it is that they need to do to solve the problems that they come to us with. That mainly being, as you know, pipeline and weak, empty pipelines. And again, when I'm talking about pipelines, it sounds like I'm talking corporate language. I'm not. I'm talking the language of business. And this applies to a brand new sole trader just starting in the back bedroom. And it applies to multinational organizations with hundreds of thousands of employees equally. And that is, you know, this idea of applying the basics with consistency. And we've talked about this a lot. And it's something that we don't see happening that often. And, you know, when you consider the complexity of the services that we've put together, both with Gramication and with the other group companies under Pipeline 44 in Pipeline 404 itself, yeah, there's a huge amount of information. There's lots of knowledge, lots of methods, techniques, all sorts of things. But actually cut it down, break it down to its simplest form. What we're suggesting that people do is write content consistently on whatever platform is appropriate for them and outreach or prospect, connect with people consistently in their target market and do that day in, day out, week in, week out. And if you consider that as a small business, the majority of startups, small business owners, don't do that, they would see an enormous change, an enormous benefit from simply doing that averagely well, but with consistency. And the idea of the concept of social selling, which is effectively what we're talking about, people talk about it, they write books about it, there's reams and reams of information, but essentially what we're talking about is writing three posts a week. And hell, they don't even need to be good posts. All they need to do is generate, make some noise, is put themselves out there. Obviously, the better the post, the better the result. But for those who are not doing it, simply doing that one thing with consistency, and if you're using LinkedIn, for example, simply connecting with, 10 people a day, it would probably bring about a 100% increase in pipeline for a startup that's currently scratching around, wondering where their next order's coming from. And I say, just to reiterate the point, they don't even need to do it well. They just need to do it. And in its simplest form, that could take 10, 15, 20 minutes a day. I think with simplicity comes discipline, great discipline. And that applies to the conversations that we've just had and explored. You know, when we're talking about adding bells and whistles, discipline to realize that that's what we're doing and take a step back. And to continually review what it is that we're doing as our businesses evolve, because businesses get more complicated. And if we step back once every 6 months, once every year, and we look at what we're doing and say, well, hang on, how did that creep in there, and actually take it away, it allows us to keep everything very, very focused on solving that pain. Equally with the sole traders that I'm talking about, you know, it's the discipline to implement those simple ideas consistently and not get distracted by all the noise that we were talking about earlier. And if they focus on those simple things with consistency, hey presto, they'll get better and better at doing it. There's lots of examples, but I think that, you know, in the context of our business and what you're doing is probably the most relevant.
Totally. And again, it's something that I've just been sitting there kind of, I guess, thinking about a little bit today with simplicity. And it gets talked about a lot. Like, I do hear people talking about it. However, the practical application of then going about and doing it is a completely different story. Most people hear people talk, or they'll listen to this podcast, for instance, and they'll go, do you know what? That's great, but how do I do that in my business? Because I believe that I am doing it in its most simplest form at this current point. And I think it's quite, well, I like to think it's a good question because I've just come up with it. But I mean, how do we do it? How do we think more simply? Because for me, it's a challenging question, but I think doing it and talking about it are very different things, right?
Yeah, of course they are. And in a minute, I'm going to throw that question back at you because you're going through this journey right now, right? So it's probably fresher with you than it is with me. I think that's a really personal question. I think it's different for everybody. And that there is no one answer that I can provide. I think creating time and space to think, going back to that one, I know I go on about it all the time and I talk to you and a whole team about it, like a stuck record. But I think creating the space and time to think and to think about these problems without distraction and without noise. For me, that's going for a walk. It's gardening. It's doing, you know, whatever it is that you enjoy doing that allows you that mental freedom. That there's a big craze at the moment in the expert world to schedule everything, to schedule meetings, to schedule time to think, to schedule time to see your kids, you know, and it's just bonkers if you ask me. I think we need to really look at ourselves and what we're doing every day. There's lots of people listening that will probably be working wall to wall, hours and hours and hours, maybe the 20, 21 hour days that I once did. So I feel the pain. You know, really, I think looking at how we're spending our time and how effectively we're spending our time quite often, I think a lot of it is spent catering for the noise and the bells and whistles. And if we can just create that space and consider the problems in their rawest form, it's in the strangest moments that those simple solutions will come. Your turn. That was all a bit non-practical, actually, given the nature of your question. What have you done that's brought about a change in you? Because there has been a big change in the past months and the past years. You've gone from somebody who was working continuously all the time and somebody who scheduled everything to today when your time is, well, at least I think, is much more productive. So what changes have you made?
Yeah, I think it came from practically looking at my diary, for one. And again, not scheduling in that time. I used to. I was one of those people. Schedule time in for the gym. Schedule time in for personal time. Schedule meetings. Schedule content creation. Schedule catch up with teams. And we made a simple change with what we do where all we do inside the business now is if you need me, bring me. Point one. How much time that has saved is honestly completely, I reckon that must save 3 to 4 hours minimum per week.
It's funny, isn't it? Because we're everybody's talking about the use of Zoom and remote tech and all that, you know, how brilliant it is and working from home. And of course, you know, we're no different. We've learned a lot through the past couple of years, but one of my big bugbears is this whole scheduling meetings, and particularly internally. You've got people that sit next to each other scheduling meetings to talk about something that could be discussed in 2 minutes, and they spend 10 minutes agreeing when they're going to do it to start with, and then they go to the meetings and they turn on Zoom and they hit record, and it's just nonsense, isn't it? And the amount of time that we're spending scheduling all these meetings with each other when we could just talk. And you're nodding your head and you're kind of smiling, because again, I know it's something I rabbit on about all the time, and I'm very extreme with it. I don't accept scheduled meetings with anybody at any time for any reason, but the freedom that gives me to think and to consider you know, the problems that we're facing, and indeed it might not be problems because I'm not aware that we have any huge problems, but consider what's next, consider how we progress, consider how we make things simpler, how we improve our customer experience in a sustainable way. All those things, I can think about them freely. You know, just pinning me down for this podcast this afternoon, Chris, was, you know, wasn't in the diary. We just happened to hop on and agree to do it. And interestingly, we probably spent far less time preparing for it than we would have done otherwise. And hopefully it's no worse off for it.
Well, they'll never know, will they?
No.
But yeah, I think so. That's the first thing. I think clearing the diary definitely has been something. But I also, there was a you challenged me about six, seven months ago, beginning of the year, to look at the problems that we were trying to address, especially from a content creation point of view. And I was looking at it going, well, there's a million different processes involved with content writing. It's so hard to narrow it all down. And you simply went, try and get it down to six processes, six steps. If you were going to choose six steps to be able to get to the result, how would you do it? And again, whether it was six, five, I can't remember the exact number, but it was get it down to the most limited amount of steps possible and in its most simplest form. And that has completely changed now my outlook on how I create programs, with how I create processes, with how I even look to implement a change within Grammarcation or doing some of the stuff for Pipeline 44, is looking at what we've got to achieve, looking at, okay, that's the result that we're looking for here, and taking the time, now I got it back from cancelling all the meetings in my diary, and thinking, do you know what? How do we get there? Not with the most information, not with the most depth, not with the most context, but in the most simplest way so we could actually achieve the result that we're looking for. And by just checking myself every single day with everything that I do and go, do you know what? Can this be simplified? Can it be made easier? Can it be made more simple? That has now saved. Do you know what? It'd be quite cool to go back at some point and have a look at how much time I was wasting and how much the team was wasting doing certain practices. Whereas now, we've improved our efficiency that much that we're able to take on more clients per Content Ninja, as an example. We're able to go through implementations and onboardings and strategy sessions in a quicker time frame, so we're able to do more of them in a month. Everything is becoming slicker because we are now taking that step back and going, do you know what? There's a simpler way of doing this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just that we can do more. We can do more well and still deliver that core value. And you know, satisfy our customers, solve their pains continually without falling over ourselves, because we're trying to do so many things for them. And so it's not only that our team can do more, they can do it more sustainably, and they're more profitable doing it because it's slicker. And again, we're talking about a team, right? But for those listening who are sole traders, it exactly the same applies for them. If they can service more customers and still solve that pain and solve that pain reliably, that, you know, their customer retention will be really high. So suddenly there's much less pressure on you to continue to sell more and more and more. Another bugbear of mine, as you know, is that in the expert space, there are so many people that use sales as a strategy for growth, and selling more, it simply isn't, certainly not until you've solved all the fundamental problems and gone through all the processes that we're talking about and solidified delivery. Sure, there's a time and a place to want to ramp up sales, but it's certainly not the way I would be approaching a business right up at day one. Indeed, I think we had that conversation as well early on, didn't we? It was, okay, take the foot off the gas, stop selling. Let's take a step back and go through these processes.
Yeah, I think sometimes it can be, especially in the expert consultancy, the coaching, solopreneur world, it can be so easy actually to keep the foot down and to keep wanting to kind of motor forward, making sale after sale after sale. You're almost, if you go through similar programs that I went through, actually, you're trained to do that. That is what is actually told step by step to go and do. Get a product and service and just keep selling it and selling it and selling it and selling it. And I've been trying to make a really strong point on this podcast and all the other pieces of content I've been creating across all the different platforms, that sometimes going slower is the best way to go about doing things. And for me, more often than not now, we are looking at trying to slow things down rather than quicken things up, purely because there's no rush. I mean, I'm only 27, and as I'm going through this journey, I've only really just begun in the grand scheme of things. And I know there are a lot of people that listen that are around my age group as well. But even if you're not, even if you're 40, 50, and you're still 60 even, and you're starting your business up, we've still got so much time to be able to do this. And it's such a fast-changing world right now that we're in, where you can create a monster very, very quickly if you're not careful. And sometimes that monster you don't even need to create. I mean, trust me, I've been there. I've done it. I've created a business which I was scared of at one point because I had no idea what it was that it was doing in the back end. We overpromised everything. And we sold and we sold and sold. And quite frankly, the business failed because of it. So that was something I know you talk about a lot. I think we were talking about website building only the other day, right? It's like, you know what? We could have created our website from day one and we would have had to have changed it probably over 100 times if we'd have done that, because we've still been trying to define exactly how we want to position ourselves. And I think now we're in that position, something that I learned again from working with you.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? The whole idea of going slow and slowing down. And it might seem that it's just a reaction to all the talk of, I'm going to get it in there, Chris. I'm going to get as many of my bugbears as possible in this conversation with you. To all this talk of hypergrowth and all that kind of flipping nonsense. You know, we hear all this language and we see all these people around us buzzing about growing quick and selling for 100 million or a billion in a year. And, you know, most of the time it's complete nonsense and it hardly ever works. And that's the reality. And the odd one does. But, you know, as people in business, and certainly from my point of view, and I know we share this goal, we're trying to build something sustainable. We're trying to build something that will sustainably solve the pains of our clients and in return, you know, deliver profitability for our business at a reasonable level so that we can continue to employ great people, create fantastic opportunities for those people in the pretty cool culture that we've got going at the Pipeline 44 Group, and, you know, afford us the freedom to do the things, not just financially, but afford us the freedoms to do the things that we want to do with the business in the future, and indeed, you know, further afield from the business. I think slowing down and simplifying it's really something that everybody should be doing. And slowing down, ironically, often means that you end up sustaining change faster. And you've only got to look at your journey and what you do to see that. And I would be slow about slowing down even. So if people, you know, if people are trying to make changes with their daily habits, for example, don't try and change them all at once. Pick one. Just pick one and focus on doing that and try to make that change consistent and sustainable, and do it for a month, 2-3 months before you're trying to do anything else. Before you know it, everything's changed, and it's changed sustainably and not just transactionally in the moment, only to return with a vengeance later on, which is what tends to happen when we see people reading all these books and listening to all these talks from the experts to huge influencers. They implement these little ideas, these methodologies, and it just becomes something that they try for a while and then it disappears. I think it's so very important that we slow down to speed up, and really focus on the simplicity as we do it.
Do you think with business in general, no matter what business it is, you could almost create the own simplest form of building a business? I was going to give you an example of it. I was trying to look at it as an overall picture from my own point of view and kind of going, identify a pain or problem, identify somebody who has that pain and problem and wants to get it and wants it solving, then find the solution, then find a way to deliver it in a profitable and efficient way, repeat. I mean, is that, I'm assuming there's obviously a lot more to it, right? But I mean, could you wrap up business in a simple way like that?
Yeah, I think so. Essentially, that's all we've done and all we're doing. Not to belittle or remove the huge complexities and the curveballs that there are in business every day. Of course, that's going to happen. This isn't about utopia. Utopia doesn't exist. The right answer doesn't exist. But yeah, I think identifying those core functions in a business and getting to the root of each one of them and keeping focus on the root of each one of those functions is certainly a very simple way of building a business that hopefully is more likely to be sustainable going forward.
I think I think it's definitely a cool way of looking at it. I've always been trying to make sure that I'm focused on the right things at the end of the day with it. So when I'm looking at the way that we structure Gramication, the way that we do things with Pipeline 44, with the contributions that we're making there, I think if we can continue to do what we're doing, it's going to do amazingly well, and it's going to solve the key problem that we're looking to, or the key pain that we're looking to address. Now, to finish off this, we've got a couple of quick fire questions that I think will be quite good.
One little point before you ask me your cheeky quick fire questions. You're grinning, so I'm not quite sure what to expect. I think the one aspect of this that we haven't touched on is customers and customer selection, if you will. It's kind of natural, particularly as you're starting a business, to want to work with anybody who wants to work with you. And there's lots of advice about how that's a bad idea, but we take it to the extreme in our business, don't we? I think, and we actually turn people away very proactively, and we say no. And the reason for that is that the customers have to tickle the right boxes. They have to fit the criteria, and we have to know that they're going to hold up their end of the bargain. It's very rare in business that a transaction is one-sided. It's very rare that, for example, when it comes to content or to anything that we're doing in the Pipeline 44 group, that success from our services is solely our responsibility. Of course, it isn't. We have a responsibility to deliver our part, but it's quite often on the customer to make sure that it succeeds or make sure that it solves the pain that they're having. And so we go to the extreme, and we disqualify customers for lots of reasons. And the behavior that we see in our customers, quite a few of which are startups with our academy products, is that they don't implement with consistency. And so that's something that I think everybody needs to listen to. And I think no matter where we are in business, consistent implementation of what we've decided to learn is really, really important. Moving away from this transactional, I'll try this for a month, it's not really had the effect. I'll try this for a week, it's not really had the effect. We've got to identify the things that really will solve our pains and implement them every single day. And so when we're taking on new customers, we take that approach. And it's kind of unnatural. I was talking to our latest sales recruit, Adam, the other day, and we were talking about what the role of a salesperson actually is, it's very, very strange coming from a traditional sales environment to hear that the role of a salesperson is to find every reason possible not to do business with somebody, because if you've eliminated all those reasons, the chances are you're going to have a customer who is going to hold up their side of the bargain. I think that's not to be dismissed when it comes to people who are starting businesses. I mean, it applies at every stage, but people who are starting businesses, you know, choose your customers carefully. And strangely enough, actually, by choosing your customers more carefully and by being very overt about it, you tend to attract more customers. It's pretty counterintuitive, but I think it's an important point in all of this.
I think that's a great way to finish off the, especially that specific subject. Again, I think one of the things that I've really been focusing in on is that fact that when you're really looking at the customers as that central point, you can really start to identify what it is that you can do to best solve that problem. And if you can do that consistently over and over again in its most simplest form, then you're going to see the results that you're looking for the sustainable growth that you're looking to achieve, no matter where you are and what you're looking to do with each of your businesses and the way you're looking to go. So, Don't be too afraid. They're only simple questions. If you've listened to any of my previous interviews, I sometimes ask these depending on who it is. But I'd be interested to know how you take on them. One of them's a really, really simple one. But this one, I think, will help a lot of people with this specific round. First one is most common mistake you see business owners make.
Oh, not learning from failure.
Love it.
It's cliche, but every time you do something wrong, it's a lesson. And trying to avoid failure is very closely connected to that. Don't avoid failure, go at it head on and fall over and think and reflect.
Love it. Thoughts on the word motivation?
If you're not motivated, go home, get a job.
Biggest contributor to your own success?
Bloody-minded determination.
Is that something that you were, do you feel you were born with, or is that something that's been nurtured and developed over time?
I don't think it's, anybody's born with or without it. It's probably a reaction to my childhood and being told that I can do better. But absolute bloody-minded determination to prove everybody wrong, which is perhaps a little childish, but that was my driving force.
And final question, top three, bearing in mind we're talking about simplicity and cutting out the noise, but I know you love a novel. I know you love certain history books that you've definitely gone through and read. I saw it in your LinkedIn post today. Top three books that you would recommend people read / listen to.
You're bringing it all out today, Chris. as you know, I cannot stand this obsession with reading other people's business books. And the fact that I'm going to publish one, the irony of the fact that I'm going to publish one is not lost on me. I can't abide it. I think alongside everything that we've talked about and this idea of freedom to think and think objectively and simplify, I think that we need to understand humanity and people and history. And I think we need to understand it such that we have perspective and the decisions that we make in business and in life, but in business for this purpose, are made with perspective. Explore the extremes of emotion, of humanity, of problems, of staff, of culture. Explore the extremes of everything. And you get the extremes by reading history books. So I'm a great believer in reading history. I think in modern history, I'm particularly interested in this genre, but there's a book by the late Robert Fisk called The Great War for Civilization. You'll have heard me recommend that before. It's a bit of a heavy book, but if you don't come away from that with an altered perspective of the last 100 years, then I don't know what will influence your ideas. So that one, definitely. I think Sapiens, or maybe if you want a slightly lighter version, Andrew Marr's Brief History of the World. It's a great book. Talks about the development of sapiens, Homo sapiens, and people, and how an awful lot of what we do today comes from our history. So definitely that one. Number three, that's going to be a tough one. I think I read a book recently called The Unfolding of Language, which again is really, really heavy, but really interesting read, and particularly probably for you actually, Chris, when you're thinking about communication and how we talk to people, it's kind of a good one. But I'm a great believer in reading books that give perspective, as I said, so I could probably rattle off hundreds to you.
I love that. I'll make sure all of those are linked in the show notes as well. Nick, where's the best place if people do want to get in contact with you or do want to follow your work? Where's the best place to get in contact with you?
As you know, Chris, I'm not exactly prolific on social media or the internet. I do have a presence on LinkedIn, so LinkedIn is probably the best place to pop by and say hello. More things to come on that in the future.
Amazing stuff. I'm sure this will be the first of many conversations that we have over a number of different topics that we definitely ponder upon when we're sitting on
Zoom. It's the first recorded one, Chris. We've had hundreds of conversations.
We definitely have. But absolute pleasure. And we will speak to you very, very soon.
Thanks, mate.